Okay, so once again, good evening. And we decided, or the we in this case is like an editorial we, I guess the we is me. I decided to try to continue in Sefer Melachim Beis a bit. I think with a few more weeks of learning Melachim Beis, basically 20 more weeks, we should be able to complete it, which will be some sort of accomplishment. And we'll try to move on. We'll try to move on with tonight with Melachim Beis, Perek Gimel.
Didn't you
Now,
say there is no really in Melachim Beis?
yeah, so we spoke about how there really is no Melachim Beis, but for argument's sake, like for convention's sake, right, we try to give the same numbering system that the rest of the world uses, even though technically speaking, you're right, there is no such thing as Melachim Beis. Now, if you remember, after Ahav died, so Ahav was succeeded by his son Ahaziah. And then he died, and he was succeeded by a brother, another son of Ahav, Yehoram ben Ahav, is the king over Yisrael in Shomron. This is in year 18 of Yehoshaphat, the king of Yehuda, and Yehoram is the king for 12 years. I should add, by the way, that I'm also trying to experiment with the source sheet. So this is all from Sefaria, which is a different website to make source sheets. I have to figure out exactly how to get the spacing to work properly, but if it goes well, I think it can produce nicer source sheets than what we had until now. Okay, let's continue. So this fellow Yehoram is really bad. The pasuk says, "Vayasa rabbe nei Hashem, rak lo kavivu ki imo." He's bad, but not as bad as his father and his mother. "Vayases matzvas habal asher asa aviv." He removed the baal that his father made. Now, what this means is as follows. And Pasuk Gimel continues, Rak b'chatos Yerovam ben Nevat Hashechti es Yisrael Davek lo sar mimena. Right? He only was attached to the sins of Yerovam ben Nevat. He didn't depart from those sins. So what we have is Yehoram is really a bad king, but he's not as bad as Ahav. Ahav was a person who believed in Baal, and Ahav also had a wife, Izebel, who had Asherah, right? Baal, if you remember, is like the male type of god. Asherah is the female type of
Isn't
god.
Asherah also a tree?
Well, Asherah is also a tree that was there to represent where the female goddess was under the Asherah tree generally. Ahav is very bad, but not nearly as bad as Izebel. And Yehoram is not as bad, neither as Ahav nor as Izebel. Now,
the succeeding generation is better than the previous
right.
one.
Occasionally you have
Right.
that succeeding generations are better. What Yehoram, the son of Ahav, did is he continued those sins of Yerovam. Yerovam ben Nevat, if you remember, built the Agalim. He built these calves, one in Dan, etc., etc., one in Be'er Sheva. These are like his own Beis HaMikdash types of things. He had his own. What? Yeah, I think so. Is that where he had them?
Isn't that
I thought Be'er Sheva, was it?
Be'er Sheva is in Yehuda.
Be'er Sheva's in Yehuda. So where were the.
Shomron?
I don't think in Shomron, I don't remember anymore. I have to go back to the Psukim. Be'er Sheva is way down south. Okay.
It is. I'm pretty sure.
So basically, Yerovam had these two agalim that he built in order to prevent the Jews from going to be Ole Regel. And Yehoram, the son of Ahav, keeps these in place. Yehoram keeps these same agalim that Yerovam built, he keeps them in place. Here, just give me one second. He made two agalim. He told them, this is in Melachim Av Perek Yud Beis. He says, Rav lachem me alos Yerushalayim, hinei alohecha Yisrael shehalucha me eretz Mitzrayim. He puts one of them in Beit El. I'm sorry, one of them is in Beit El and the other one is in Dan. So these are the two agalim that Yeravam built. And these two things are maintained by Yehoram. In other words, politically speaking, Yehoram was still fearful that the Jewish people will go up to Yerushalayim and see that that Melech Yehuda has a lot of power. So to avoid that, he still has these agalim, and he says, don't go up to Yerushalayim. Now, Pasuk Beis, if you read it carefully, says that he removed the Baal. The Pasuk does not say he removed the Asherah. What probably happened is, and the Radak that we have in the back on page 3 of this packet, the Radak hints at this, he didn't move the Asherah as a sign of respect for his mother. You see, Daddy, Achav, is dead. Mommy is alive. So Daddy's Avodah Zarah, the Baal, he's dead. I'm not going to do that. Mommy's Avodah Zarah, as a sign of respect for Mommy, I'm not going to remove. Now that itself is bad. You're supposed to remove Avodah Zarah. Obviously, in the face of Avodah Zarah, you're not supposed to respect a parent, but there's a certain justification that he had that I'm not really a worshiper. It's just that Mommy wants it. So therefore, Mommy is no one you want to mess with. But therefore, what Yehoram is doing is not nearly as bad. Yes?
Two things. Number one, you could say he is a worshiper of Avodah Zarah if you compare him to Abraham. Because Abraham, he went against his parents.
Absolutely. Right. That, what you're supposed to do is to be an iconoclast and to literally.
And number two, if his father was alive, he probably would have kept.
Correct. So why the pasuk says he did bad, but he's not as bad as the others.
No, but I'm contending that he is because he would have kept.
So apparently, though, the pasuk is saying the fact that he did something to remove some Avodah Zarah makes him better on a certain level. Let's continue. Pasuk Dalet. Mesha, the king of Moab, hayanokeid veheshiv lamelech Yisrael mea elef karim umea elef elim tzamer. Basically, the king of Moab is a sheep breeder, according to this translation, and he used to give tribute to the king of Yisrael, 100,000 lambs and 100,000 rams that are full of wool. Right? This apparently was a very significant tribute that they would get from Moab. But when Achav died, Pasuk Hei says, "Vayifsha melech Moab b'melech Yisrael." So then the king of Moab rebels against the king of Yisrael, and Yehoram promptly goes out, vayifkodes kol Yisrael. He decides he has to gather the entire nation for some war against Moab. Okay, so Moab used to be a tribute state to Yisrael. Then, after Achav dies, they stop paying the tribute. And Pasuk Zion says that what Yehoram does is he says, you know what, I am going to join up, I'm going to join forces with the king of Yehuda. Vayelech vayishlach el Yehoshaphat melech Yehuda leimar, melech Edom pashabi, hateleich at, hateleich iti el Moav lamilchama, vayomer e'ele, kamoni kamocha, ka'ami kamecha, kesusai kesusecha. This is the important part. In other words, the king of Yisrael, Yehoram, reaches out to the king of Yehuda, and he says, will you go to war with me? And he says, yes, I will. Right? Kamoni, kamocha, ka'ami, kamecha, kesusai, kesusecha. Now, I don't know how many of you remember this, because it was a long time ago, because we had a whole summer break in the middle, but we had a very, very similar thing at the beginning of Perek Chof Beis of the so-called Melachim Aleph. Right? And being a parakhav base of the so-called Melachim Aleph, we have the king of Yisrael. approaching the king of Yehuda and saying, will you go to war with me for this area called Ramot Gilad? Right? That was Achav reaching out to the same Yehoshaphat. Will you go to war with me? And Yehoshaphat's response was, yes. And these are his words. Kamoni kamocha, ke'ami ke'amecha, kisusai kisusecha. Right? Exactly the same words. Like, we're all together, my nation, your nation, we're all together. And they gather an army, and they say, they gather the Nevi'im, and they say, should we go to war? And all the false prophets at that time say, go to war, you'll be successful. Yehoshaphat says, I need a real prophet over here. They go to the real prophet, who in that context was Micha, Michayahu ben Yimla. At first, Michayahu ben Yimla says, yeah, go, you'll win the war. That's what everybody's saying. And they say, come on, what are you saying? So he says, oh, what I'm saying is, don't go, right? But they don't listen. They go to war. And that fateful battle is the battle in which they decide to attack only Achav, only the king. And he's killed. But he decided to stay standing in the chariot so as not to hurt the morale of the people. So what we see is this exact thing happened. And it wasn't a good thing because they joined forces and it didn't work well. And in fact, the Navi in Sefer Divrei Hayomim tells Yehoshaphat that b'hischa berecha im rasha, paras Hashem es ma'asecha. Yehoshaphat, you're joining up with Achav the Rasha. God's going to get you. Paras Hashem es ma'asecha. God will break through all of your accomplishments. Right? Things that you've accomplished. So this episode is a little troubling on a certain level because Yehoshaphat should have learned the lesson. Right? What happened years ago is he joined up with Achav and his health nished. It didn't help at all. Achav was killed in that battle. Yehoshaphat learned the lesson and don't join. But he does join. He joins up with Yehoram, the son of Achav, and we'll talk about this in a few moments. So far, so good? Now, Pasuk Tes, Pasuk Ches, Vayomer, Eze Derech Na'ale, Vayomer Derech Midbar Edom. They say, which way should we go up? And the answer is go through Edom. Now, going through Edom is not the normal way to attack Moab. Right? Edom is to the south. They're basically making a detour to the south, going through Edom to come up to Moab. But the reason why they wanted to do this is they wanted additional fighters to join with them. They say it's not enough if we have Yehuda and Yisrael united to fight against Moab. We want Edom also. So they say we'll go through the wilderness of Edom. So then the king of Yisrael, the king of Yehuda, Pasuk Tes, and the king of Edom go, and they vayasobu derech shivat yamim v'lo hayamayim lamachaneh v'labheima asher beragleihem. What happens is they go through Edom, and it looks like another disaster is coming. No? All the writing is on the wall. We had in Perikov Beis of Malachim Aleph that Yehuda and Yisrael joined together. Nothing good happened. Now they join together again, and they even have Edom with them, and suddenly there is no water for the army. Now, Shtel Zachfar, they're going through a desert. Hello? Right? When you fight going through a desert, you should not expect to have lots of water, right? By definition, deserts don't have lots of water. But they go through, and suddenly there's no water. And the king of Yisrael screams out, Aho, ki kara Hashem l'shoshes hamlochem el l'sosesom b'yad Moab. So the king of Yisrael screams out, alas, woe unto us. Right? All these three great kings are going to be killed by Moab. So the same thing happens that happened in Perchav Beis. Yehoshaphat says, is there any Navi of Hashem that we can ask. And one of the servants of the king says, right, by Yomer, Po Elisha ben Shaphat, Ashe Yatzak Mayim Ayide Eliyahu. Over here is Elisha. Now, let's go slowly. In Perek Chaf Beis of Malachim Aleph, when Yehoshaphat says, is there any Navi? So Achav, the king himself, responded, and the king said, yeah, there's a Navi, but he won't say anything good, he hates me, his name is Micha, etc. Right? Over here, the king, Yehoram, the son of Achav, don't say nothing. One of the slaves says, right? Vayan echad me'avdei melech Yisrael. One of the slaves of the king responds and says, oh, here's Elisha, the son of Shaphat, who poured water al yedei Eliyahu. Fascinating pasuk, no? Po. What does po mean?
Here.
Here. In the desert. Right? I know of journalists who sometimes are sent to be with army
embedded
in an army unit, right? That's a thing. Right? It's a thing. That's what John Oliver would call it. What we have over here is Elisha is embedded with the army unit. This is already a fascinating idea. Until now, Elisha had been a private type of prophet. He had given prophecy the end of Perek Beis. He had done some miracles, and this Perek is a continuation. We'll see some miracles through Elisha also. But Elisha had until now been his own man. Eliyahu was never with the people, no? Eliyahu is very far from the Rebbe. Eliyahu and Navi is very far from the people. Elisha is now embedded with the unit. Apparently he did this on his own. You don't see a tzivui, you don't see Hashem telling Elisha to do this. Elisha, for some reason, recognizes that his role as a prophet is to be with the people. Now, this is an amazing role, because he's now going to be giving prophecy, not about like some individual action, some individual people. This is a prophecy for all of Klal Yisrael, because you have the king of Yehuda and the king of Yisrael, and the Navi, right, is going to give prophecy for all of them. So the fact that Elisha is here is really very, very important. You don't get the impression that he is fighting. You don't get that impression. You see just Po Elisha ben Shaphat here. Some of the Mefarshim actually point this out. Elisha, you don't get the impression he was ever a fighting man. I don't know. So apparently he's doing this in order to try to bring about a gigundous miracle and to get the king of Yisrael to do some sort of tshuva. Now, the fact is that Elisha is also described as the person who poured water on Eliyahu's hands. Now, Chazal used this to mean Gedola Shimusha Yoseh Milimuda. That pouring water on the hands means not only did he study and get information and get values from his Rebbe, but he was always with him. He poured water. He's gissing Nagelvasa for him. Right? He's pouring water for Eliyahu. Gedola Shimushi Yosef Milimuda, the Maharsha writes on that Gemara, the beginning of Brachos. What that means, Zakhna Maharsha, is that there are two different types of halacha. There's halacha that I teach when I give a class, and then there's halacha that I do. The halacha that I do, in some ways, is a more pure form of halacha, because you know you're putting it into practice. Right? It's a fascinating Maharsha because it seems to contradict the Gemara at the beginning of Horios. That's a longer conversation. But what the Maharsha seems to be saying is, if you are Yatzak Mayim Al Yedei Eliyahu, that means that you poured water and you know exactly what your Rebbe did in all situations. So that shows me that you, right, you not only got the textbook information, you not only are a person who processed the lectures, but you also saw the day in, day out activities. And the Maharsha takes it to mean that in the context of knowing what we do la halacha, right, what's done, not just what we tell you to do. That's the Maharsha's take. This book, the Musar HaNeviim, Musar HaNeviim is a great sefer on Tanakh. It was published by Feldheim years ago. Avi Lazdun gave it to me when I started saying the Shi'urim. So the Musar HaNeviim writes as follows. He says that the advantage of Shimusha Yosem Yilimuda is there are certain things that you can't learn from a textbook. Kindness can't be learned. And not only can it not be learned, but the type of reaction, sometimes you see people, and occasionally they react with fire. No way, you can't do that. And occasionally they react, okay. Like, to do shimush, and to really connect with a person, and watching what they do, that is a way of developing moral lessons. Morality is not taught in textbooks, no? Morality is taught by watching moral people do moral things. Right? Now, by the way, another way of looking at this is morals are taught in Sefer Bereishis. They're taught through stories. I can't say do chesed, but I could say this is the story of Avram Avinu. Watch what he did and emulate it. Right? So that's all part of Shimush. Right, it's part of the lesson of that you have to connect with a person, and Eliyahu had an Elisha who's with him, and therefore, apparently, Elisha is the best student of Eliyahu, because he didn't only get the textbook knowledge, he also got the morals, etc. That's what we're trying to say. Yes?
What about
Perkei Avot? Perkei Avot are moral lessons that are conveyed in a very very didactic sort of way. Do this, don't do that. My guess would be that if I want to convey moral lessons, the story, a good Pirkei Avos teacher tells stories also. You just say XYZ, it doesn't impact on people as well. Okay. Yeah.
But isn't the phrase also ironic considering that the army is suffering from a lack of order?
So another pshat, if you look in the Radak over here somewhere, wherever I have Radak. So the Radak on page, page 3 of this little booklet. Asheyatzak Mayim, the first explanation of the Radak is Shesherei Toto, he served him. And Chazal learned from here, Gedola Shimusha Yosem Limuda. Another explanation, Bidrash Amar Od, Asheyatzak Mayim, Aydel Yehu, Bahar HaKarmel, when the Mizbeach, they're trying to burn the carbon on the Mizbeach by Har HaKarmel, and Eliyahu says, dig a moat around the Mizbeach and fill it up with water. How do they fill it up with water? So they had 12 jugs and it filled up the whole area that they dug up with water. So Chazal asked, how did 12 little jugs fill up that entire area with water? So the answer was that they were pouring the water on Elisha's hands and it became like Mayon HaMesgaber. It became that the water keeps on coming and coming and coming. And as the water keeps on coming, that fills up the entire thing. So what we see is that Elisha precisely had done a miracle with water, and now that they are in desperate need for water, they are calling on Elisha because he has a certain expertise.
Because the first explanation, because Eliyahu is known as a withholder of water, so the fact that he's the Talmud of Eliyahu
would seem to go again, right? But at the same time, again, one of the points that we made last time we learned was Tanakh is precisely trying to contrast the model of Eliyahu with the model of Elisha, right? And part of the contrast is the water, like we're going to see now.
So maybe he learned from Eliyahu
what Elio did was wrong, perhaps. Right. You can learn that also. Yeah, Frida.
Just a quick comment on the didactic versus example thing. You can learn the facts from lectures. You can get the general principles. You know, what the framework is, what the lay of the land is, what's the right thing to do. But as to how to actualize it,
you need
a person to see.
See, Hasidic stories are very long-winded. By Litvaks, like, the comments are very terse. Uh-huh. The Vilna Gaon would have like half a sentence, right? And that's all he said. The Hasidim, and because they're trying to teach different types of things. If I want to teach halacha, I want to teach in as terse a way as possible. Don't make any mistake. So my words are very measured. I say X, not Y. Right, but if I want to teach an attitude,
right.
I have to. I think that's 100% correct. Fine. So Yehoshaphat, the king of Yehuda, says, "Oh, Elisha is here." That he says, "Yeah, Hashem's words are with this Elisha fellow." And then Vayerdu Elav Melech Yisrael v'Yehoshaphat u'Melech Edom. All three of them go down to Elisha. Now, if you read this pasuk carefully, you notice Vayelech Elav Melech Yisrael u'Melech Edom, the king of Yisrael, the king of Edom, and Yehoshaphat. It doesn't say the king of Yehuda. Parallel structure would have that there are three kings, but only two of them are described as kings. And the Radak over here comments on Chazal say that this teaches us some of. This teaches us the anava, the humility of Yehoshaphat. Yehoshaphat respected the Navi so much that he removed his regal garments and he goes to the Navi like a commoner. So Yehoshaphat is not a melech when he goes to the Navi. Now that's one explanation of the Radak. The second explanation of the Radak is fascinating, and it goes back to what we began with. We spoke about the parallel story in Malachim Aleph Perek Chaf Beis, where Yehoshaphat and Achav join forces, and it doesn't end well. But Yehoshaphat didn't really get punished in that episode. Zok the Radak, in his second explanation over here, this is the Radak that begins, Melech Yisrael v'Yehoshaphat u'Melech Edom. It's like Radak number 4 on this sheet, in page whatever it is. The Yesh Omrim, 2 lines before the end. The Yesh Omrim, Shenigzara Gzeira Sheyehareg Im Achav, V'haya HaKatav Mone Levno Min Osa Hasha'a. Lefikach Lo Nikra Melech. U'Bizchar Sheyardu Lefnei HaNavi Zachol Eros Ko Elo HaNisen. Zok the Radak, that Yehoshaphat really, because he joined forces with Achav, he should have been killed back in that war in Malachim Aleph Perkhof Beis. But, for some reason, he wasn't killed. But even though he wasn't killed, he lost the malchus. He's not considered a king. There are two different definitions of being a king. There's the king who's the appointed king, and then there's the king who's functioning as king. And in halacha, there are two different things. Sometimes I could be the king who's appointed, but I could be on the run. Right? I can be out of my palace. So, who's really the king? The appointed king or the acting king? Right? What happened with Yehoshaphat is Yehoshaphat is not really acting as king anymore on a certain level because Hashem took it away from him after that episode. So that's why the Pasuk does not describe him as a king according to this Radak. Now, Pasuk Yud Gimel, we have to like pick up the pace a teeny bit. So the three kings come to, or the two kings and the commoner come to Elisha, and Elisha like hits him between the eyes, right? Elisha says, "Mali balach lecha nevi'ei avicha vel nevi'ei amecha," right? Why are you coming to me? Go to your father's nevi'im, your mother's nevi'im. Pasuk Yud Gimel. So the king of Yisrael says, "No, but Hashem called these three kings to find out whether they are going to be handed over to Moab." In other words, Elisha says, "I know this story. I know what happened back in Malachim Aleph Perek Chaf Beis, right, that the false Nevi'im said go to war. So Elisha says, what are you coming to me for? Go to them. Like, pow, get away. Who needs you? Right? So Yehoshaphat answers, no, we need you. Right? Yehoshaphat's answer is, he says, we won't know. We're going to be killed. So Elisha says, oh, you know what? Elisha swears that Chai Hashem Tzvakos Asher Amati Lefanav Ki Le Pnei Yehoshaphat Melech Yehuda Anino Say Im Abit Elecha Ve'mer Eka. He says, I'm not going to look at you, Yehoram the son of Ahav. I'm only going to address Yehoshaphat. In other words, Elisha is saying, you know, you guys, king of Yisrael, king of Edom, you're like saying Yiddish, like some dismissive insult or something. Ge feifen von da, like get lost. I don't need you. Right? I'm only going to address King Yehoshaphat. Ve'ata kechuli minagein, v'haya kenagein hamnagein, v'atihi alav yad Hashem. And Elisha says, and bring me someone who plays music. Now, there are different approaches in Chazal. Why does he need someone to play music? Chazal say, by the way, that Nevuah, and the Rambam, by the way, in the Moreh, when he describes Nevuah, tells us that Nevuah can only settle in on a person who's in a good mood. When a person's not in a good mood, right, you can't have nevuah. There's a Mordechai ben David song. Ein adam shar shira, ela mitoy simcha. Right? That's the same type of idea. You can only have shira when you're happy. You can only have nevuah when you're happy. The same type of idea. Elisha is saying, play music, because he wants the inspiration of Hashem. Now,
so is that the reason why during the 3 weeks or during
That's interesting.
That we shouldn't listen to music.
I mean it's considered a veilus of some sort. That's a technical explanation. You're offering a deeper explanation that maybe it's because we feel that God's presence isn't with us, and music is something that can bring God's presence on a certain level.
Right.
That's an interesting idea. Requires more thought. Okay, but the fact is, Elisha says, play music. Now, there are two explanations in the Radak here. One explanation in the Radak is Elisha in the previous pasuk got angry. He says, I'm not going to deal with you guys. I'm only dealing with Yehoshaphat. The second you get angry, you lose divine inspiration. But they want Nevuah. So he says, you know what? I lost my divine inspiration because I got angry. Play some music, right? Bring out the fiddles, and then I'll be in the mood, then I'll prophesy. That's one explanation. The other explanation of the Radak is that after Eliyahu HaNavi died, Elisha was in mourning. And Elisha couldn't get prophecy easily because his Rebbe's not alive. And therefore he says that, you know what? You got to play music in order to get me into the mood. Okay, but basically he says, play music. And then after the music is played, Vayomer ko amar Hashem, aso hanacha hazeh gevim, that this wadi shall be full of pools, ki ko amar Hashem, that God also said you're not going to see any rain, you're not going to see any wind, but it's going to be full of water, and you'll drink, and your animals will drink, and everyone will be fine. Ko Amar Hashem is said twice, in Pasuk 16 and Pasuk 17. There are two different nevuahs that Elisha is bringing forth. One nevuah he's bringing forth is that water is going to come. Nevuah number two that he's bringing forth is that everyone will drink, and that pasuk yudches v'nakal zos be'enei Hashem v'nasan es moav b'yadchem, and moav will be given over to you. Elisha is supposed to have double the power over Eliyahu. Hence, there's a double nevuah here. Nevuah one, water will come. Nevuah two, that you're going to defeat Moab. No? You will conquer every fortified town, every splendid city. You will fell every good tree, stop up all the wells of water, and every fertile field you shall ruin with stones. Basically, you're going to tzeshmeter them. You'll destroy them. You'll smite them. You'll knock them dead. Right? That's the Nevuah of Elisha. Now, Elisha says in Pasuk Yates, you'll knock down every tree, no? V'chol eitz tov tapilu. Are you allowed to do that, by the way? This week's parasha. When you conquer a city, when you do not knock down the trees, no?
Fruit trees.
Don't. And the Pasuk says over here, knock down every good tree. So you want to say maybe a good tree means a good tree, it's not a fruit tree? Usually good tree, as in Garden of Eden good tree, right, means fruit trees, no? How is Elisha saying, knock down every tree? We're not allowed to do that. So, again, all the Rishonim comment, and there are two basic explanations that are given. Rashi takes the approach that on Pasuk Yudches, Yutes, Rashi says, V'nakal zos be'inei Hashem, that for this nation of Moav, this is a lowly nation. Moav, you're allowed to knock down their fruit trees. That's Rashi's comment. The Rambam writes in the Perush HaMishnah that the reason why they are allowed to knock down the fruit trees is it's a special Hora'as Sha'ah. Right? There's a special permission, one-time permission that's given. Now, both Rashi and the Rambam assume that ordinarily you're not allowed to knock down the fruit trees here. But either Moav fruit trees are permitted, that's Rashi's comment. Comment two of the Rambam is it's permitted this time, right? Special Nevuah, so it's permitted. Now, Rashi's comment is fascinating because Rashi's saying that Baal Tashvis depends on who owns it, no? Usually, I assume that Baal Tashvis means, even if it's my own item, like Baal Tashvis. Baal Tashvis is probably to ingrain within us a type of attitude that we should not just destroy things. Everything has a purpose, don't destroy things. And even if it's, I remember my grandfather, one of the only things I remember from my mother's father, is he used to scream at me all the time, me and my cousin Eliza, we used to go over and we used to take out, they had lots of paper plates underneath a sink. And we used to take them out and we made what we called art projects. And art projects basically means that we took lots of crayons and we scribbled over all the paper plates. My grandfather came in and he let me and Eliza have it. What do you think? They cost a penny a pound. What are you destroying, right? And in some ways, it's wanton destruction is bad. Even if you own it, it's bad. That's a simple explanation. But from Rashi, you see that no, you're allowed to destroy stuff if it belongs to people like Moav. Now, there is a rush in Maseches Midos that says something along those lines. Everyone, the Mishnah in Midos speaks about that they had people whose job was to guard the Beis HaMikdash at night. It's considered respectful of any palace that you have guards. The Beis HaMikdash had guards also. Let's say one of the guards would fall asleep on the job. So the Mishnah said that what they would do is they'd take a torch and start burning their clothing. By the way, you wake up. I don't know if you remember in the honeymooners. It's a quick way to wake up, right? You know what I'm talking about, right? It's a quick way to wake up that suddenly there's like a fire going at your pants. Oh my gosh, you can wake up fast that way. So the rush asks in Maseches Midos, how are they allowed to do that? Shouldn't that be Baal Tashvis? Now, other Rishonim say it's not Baal Tashvis because you're allowed to destroy stuff for a good purpose. It's assumed to be a good purpose to keep the guards of the Beis HaMikdash awake. But the Rush gives a different answer. The Rush in Midos writes, the reason why they're allowed to burn the clothing is because of the Rush, is because Hefker Bezin Hefker. Hefker Bezin Hefker! Yeah, Hefker, because it's ownerless, you're allowed to destroy it. Who says you can destroy something that's ownerless? Apparently the Rush holds that something that's Hefker, there's no Baal Tashvis on it. For the Rush, the Devar Avram, the Kovner Rav, has a tshuva about this Rush. But Hefker removes the prohibition of Baal Tashvis. For the Rush, Baal Tashvis is a subset of Gezel, of stealing. And if it's ownerless, you're allowed to destroy it. Now, that seems to be against a number of Gemaras. It's a complicated rush, but this comment of Rashi, that there's no Baal Tashvis on stuff that belongs to Moav, is cut from the same cloth as that comment of the rush. Okay, fine.
From this week's parsha, it's always the enemy. It's talking about the enemy.
So when we're attacking a nation, yes, right, we're attacking a city, we're not supposed to destroy the fruit trees, but that's only most nations. Moav, you're allowed to destroy their fruit trees. That's what Rashi learns. The Minchas Chinuch makes a big deal of this Rashi.
So no one gives it a conservationist spin?
So I think that's the mainstream approach, is the conservation, that everything has a purpose, has nothing to do with stealing, but that's not the way Rashi is learning. That's probably the way the Rambam learns. How come Elisha says destroy the trees? In this one case, there's an exception. Right? That's the approach of the Rambam. Okay, the Psukim continue. In the morning, Vayhi baboker ka'alota mincha. That's like a hard pasuk to read. In the morning, when it's time to give the mincha, right? Morning is not the time to give mincha. Prime means that there's two different stages. That water came in the direction of Edom. The land is covered with water. The Moabites hear that the kings were advancing to make war on them, right? Every man old enough to bear arms rally. They station themselves at the border. And they get up in the morning, and the sun is shining on the water, and Moab sees that the water is red. Because the sun is shining down on the water, it looks red. And they said, oh, there's blood. The kings must have fought among themselves and killed each other. Now let's go to the spoil, Moab. In other words, the people of Moab see that first there's a lot of water, and then the sun is shining on the water, and they say, oh my gosh, all the blood. Obviously, the king of Yehuda and Israel and Edom, they're all killing each other. Let's go. Let's plunder. So they go in without holding their guns and their swords. They go in to just take the spoils. And they come to the camp of Yisrael, and Yisrael sees that they are unarmed, and they kill all of them. Vayakum Yisrael, vayakos Moab, vayanusum ipneihem. Right? So they attack Moab, they run away. Then they keep on advancing, and they are attacking Moab, and they destroy the towns, and every person throws a stone into the fertile field, so it's covered over. They stop up every spring, they fell the fruit trees. Only the walls of this one town of Kir Haroshet remain, and they surround it and they attack it. So basically, Moab really is pushed back considerably. They think they're going to get the Jews. They are pushed back considerably. But the king of Moab sees that they're losing the war, and he decides to send 700 swordsmen to break away to the king of Edom, but they fail. Then he takes his son, and he brings him up as an offering on the wall. And this creates great anger against the Jewish people. They withdrew, and they go back to their own land. So the basic story ends over here, not as a tremendous victory, right? Instead of destroying Moab completely, they have this one city of Kir Haroshet, and somehow the king offers his son as an offering, and this creates a big kitrug on Klal Yisrael. This creates something that Hashem is angry with the Jews. Now, just two points to make over here. One point is that there's a machlokas in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, machlokas Rav and Shmuel. The king offers his son. Is the king offering his son to Hashem or to Avodah Zarah?
Which king?
The king of Moab.
Oh, that's what I thought.
The king of Moab goes and offers his firstborn son as an offering, and somehow this brings a great wrath upon Israel. Now, this means one of two things. Either the king decided to sacrifice his son to Hashem, or the king decided to sacrifice his son to Avodah Zarah. But either way,
it's bad.
This was bad for the Jews. Because Hashem looks at the Jews and Hashem says, you know what, Jewish people? These people are more dedicated than you are. They're even offering their son. You're not doing anything like that. Right? And that is the, right? That's what the pasuk means, that he ketzef gadol al Yisrael. Now, Chazal have a creative read of this situation. The creative read is that the king of Moab doesn't offer his own son as a sacrifice, but he offers as a sacrifice the king of Edom's son. the king of Moab basically decided to try to get Edom to break from the alliance of Yehuda and Israel. They go and they take the son as a captor, the son of the king of Edom, and they bring that person as a sacrifice. Either way, there's Ketzef on Klal Yisrael, and either way, the story ends not as a complete success. In other words, in Melachim Aleph Perek Chaf Beis, what happened was that Yehoshaphat joins forces with Ahab, and that's wholly unsuccessful. Over here, they listen to the Navi. It's somewhat more successful, but at the end of the day, it's not a complete success. The lesson might be that ultimately, yeah, Hashem wants Jewish unity, but as a tzaddik, Yehoshaphat, you're not really supposed to join forces with Ahab, with his family, etc. There's much more to say about this, but I think we finished the parak. So thank you for listening.